From Vermont Public, this is The Frequency. I'm Mitch Wertlieb. It's Tuesday, April 16th, and here are today's headlines. Vermont is relying on mostly volunteer labor to provide long-term recovery for individuals still dealing with damage from last summer's flooding. But many of those volunteers say they need more help from the state. Sue Minter is with Capstone Community Action, which is providing assistance to volunteer recovery groups.
I frankly don't feel that it is fair for community volunteers to be expected to take on the level of challenge in our recovery at this time without more support from the state or FEMA.
Long-term recovery groups say they need help coordinating labor and securing funding to complete flood repair projects. The state recovery office says it doesn't have the funding to hire people to do that work, and it says long-term recovery in other states is generally driven by volunteers. The organizers of the Bookstock Literary Festival have abruptly canceled this year's event. Bookstock was first held in 2009, and right up to this past weekend, the organizers were promoting the upcoming festival, which was planned for the weekend of June 22nd in Woodstock, Vermont. Bookstock co-founder Peter Romaner declined to give specific information on why the event was canceled, but he said the board met this weekend and realized there were too many challenges to moving ahead with the literary festival.
It was extremely painful. It happened very quickly. We had to let the patient die.
Romaner said organizers may hold a stripped-down poetry festival this year with fewer events, and he said it wasn't clear if the literary festival would be able to return next year. Some of the authors scheduled to appear in June included Julia Alvarez, Robert Pinsky, and Lauren Groff. Organizers said the festival attracted upwards of 1,500 people annually. Voters in Slate Valley Unified Union School District last week rejected their proposed budget for the second time in a row. The Rutland Herald reports voters will likely return to the polls for a third try in May. The Fairhaven-based district's second attempt failed by a vote of 544 to 947 against. That's after the first budget proposal failed on town meeting day. Three other Rutland County school districts have budget revotes coming up on April 30th. They include Barstow, Otter Valley, and Rutland Town. On town meeting day, voters rejected 30 school budgets statewide, which was far above average. Spring has sprung, well, the unofficial start to spring anyway, as marked each year in Vermont when a cinder block falls through the ice of Joe's Pond in Danville. The Joe's Pond Association, or JPA, announced the most watched block in the state had fallen through the pond's ice where it's placed each winter at precisely 4:02 on Sunday morning. April 5th is the earliest recorded ice-out day, with May 6th being the latest. That's according to NBC5. Ice-out days have been recorded by the JPA since 1988. Folks are invited to place a small bet on when ice-out day will happen, with the proceeds split between the winner and the Joe's Pond Association. And another sure sign that spring is on the way, amphibian migration has started in earnest. Across the state, people have reported spotting tiny spring peepers, rust-colored red-backed salamanders, wood frogs, green frogs, and yellow polka-dotted spotted salamanders. On the first warm, wet nights of spring, these species move from the woods, where they overwinter, to pools and wetlands to breed. Some people look forward to this migration every year, like Teague O'Connor, who heads an outdoor education program in Burlington. He went to a pond in Shelburne on a wet night in late February to look for early season migrations.
It's one of these things where there are a few sort of peak phenology events throughout the year that are just these really beautiful expressions of what it means to be an animal. And some of them are in these areas that are a confluence of humans and wildlife.
Enthusiasts often keep track of and report the species they observe on migration nights. Coming up, what led to the closure of Goddard College in Plainfield, a progressive higher learning institution that first opened its doors in 1938. That's after this.
Thanks for tuning in to The Frequency, and thanks to VITA for their support. VITA, celebrating 50 years of helping Vermont businesses grow and thrive. From agriculture to energy, startups to established companies, find solutions that fit your business. Visit veda.org to start your next chapter.
The board of Goddard College is still working to determine the future of the Plainfield campus. Goddard's leadership announced last week that the college will close at the end of the spring semester due to long-standing financial constraints and lower-than-expected enrollment. The announcement came just a few months after Goddard announced it would become an online-only institution. Poet Dennis Rush joined Goddard's board as a graduate student and again as an alum. He discussed what changed over the past few months with Michaela Lafrac on Vermont Edition yesterday.
We had a plan to turn this into a positive thing. It was never the intent that it was just the first step in closing it by any means. And then recently, just within the last couple of weeks, more firm enrollment numbers came in. And truly, it just wasn't in a balance. And we didn't have any more places to cut. We had already sacrificed. There were faculty furloughs. There were deferred maintenance upon the campus. There was nowhere else to take from. There was no financial trickery that was going to enable us to finish that fall term. And we just couldn't do that to the students. That would have prevented us from having an effective teach-out plan. That would have just basically left them high and dry just right in the middle of the term. It was such a painful decision.
I do want to make sure that we turn to the future of the campus. What should we know about the state of the campus, what could happen next, and where that money will go?
Well, I'll just jump to the end. The money will go towards the debt that the college already has to pay back. That's going to be a significant portion of it. We just had a meeting this morning in which we started to talk about any sort of hint of an offer. All of our energy so far has been going into how can we keep the college open. And even though there were some rumors flying around about offers, and we just started having those conversations today as far as, like, okay, what do we have on the table? And I assure you that we don't have as much on the table as people may assume.
I do know that Cabot has been renting some of the dorm rooms for a few years now for its employees. Are there any discussions going on with Cabot about purchasing the land?
No details of anything firm or official has been brought to the board. We've talked about it briefly as a possibility. The rentals have been successful. And one thing I just want to touch on is that as far as the rentals and the other uses of the campus for sort of this auxiliary income, none of those come close to sustaining the cost of the campus. So I know there's some rumors out there that those things were lucrative, which they were great, but they wouldn't sustain the cost of the campus.
We had a person email in with a question about a specific part of the campus, the campus library and the archive that is housed there. Do you have any information on what the future of the library and the archive will be?
Not yet. I truly don't. I mean, as far as record keeping and all of that, that's what we're scrambling to do now, is to find a home for things, try to ensure that Goddard's legacy is preserved in any way that we possibly can. But no, I don't have any information on what could happen with it.
Before I let you go, I do wonder how you're going to hold on to Goddard's legacy in your own work. I mean, you are on the board, yes, but you're also a graduate and a poet yourself.
Right. I mean, I am as devastated as anyone as part of this. And then on top of that, the feeling of responsibility and guilt for having participated in the vote to close the school. But I'm just going to have to see it as I am lucky to have been a part of Goddard, and that will never be diminished. And I think that anyone who has gone to Goddard should feel very proud that they were a part of something extremely precious, and the entire world of higher ed has lost something that's critical, the diversity, the unique pedagogy. The world has lost something, and they don't even know what they've lost.
That was Goddard College board member Dennis Rush. You can find the full Vermont Edition episode on Goddard's past and future in your podcast feed or on vermontpublic.org. Thanks for listening to The Frequency today. We had additional reporting from Peter Hirschfeld, Howard Weiss-Tisman, Kevin Trevelin, Jen Jarecki, and Lexi Krupp. Our executive producer is Kevin Trevelin, and our music is by Blue Dot Sessions. I'm Mitch Wertlieb. Talk to you tomorrow.
How are we supposed to fix what we don't talk about? Welcome to Homegoings, a Vermont Public podcast that encourages fearless conversations about art and race.
It's like an extended family, and especially around homegoing time.
Join us for Homegoings, wherever you get your podcasts. We're a proud member of the NPR network.